have the ground game. We've actually built the practices that people aspire to create.
History will prove one of us correct.
Wait. You're not letting me finish, bro.
This is how you become bulletproof. Bulletproof. Bulletproof.
All right. Episode 344. The pod is live. It is just three amigos. You guys remember What's that movie? Up? That was a pretty good movie, actually.
Oh, phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
Phenomenal movie.
You know, I actually have been watching, I'm friends with someone who's a movie buff. Let's just say he's in the industry. His dad is like a famous in the industry guy. And he gives me like the movies to kind of rewatch when I'm bored. And it is shot. You know, when you see a movie, you kind of check it off and then move on. I don't know about you guys, but I never watch it again. It's like amazing to go back and revisit some things. Not the classics, but things like, what did I watch the other night? Den of Thieves. Do you remember that movie, Den of Thieves?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's taking me back. Yeah.
And Heat 2, like watching stuff like that. It's like watching it again for the first time because shit, you watched it in like 99, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, memories.
Memories. Yeah, when I was Netflixing and chilling, and it wasn't called Netflixing and chilling.
It was on a DVD.
Yeah. Yeah, TV. Literally.
Those were the days where you were trying to think, should I get the Blu-ray?
Right.
I should get the Blu-ray.
Maybe I should splurge for Blu-ray. Right. My date might be impressed.
That's right.
All right.
I'm cool.
Dwight, before you joined, Trey and I were talking about a little fitness. He is on a mission. He is a man on a mission right now. We were talking about Trey, you're building a gym. And I love it when dentists get fit or put fitness as a big priority because it dentistry really taxes your body. I think the antidote to that is a lot of core work, calisthenic stuff, kind of stuff you and I were competing on this summer until I got hurt like an old man.
Tell us about a W
for you, right?
1-0.
Yeah. I mean, dude,
cheers,
it's,
Trey.
You know, yeah. They always say, I think Craig has said, his dad said that the litmus test of you being old is like you go to bed fine and you wake up with like a new injury kind of thing. And I'm like, I think that's happened to me once or twice. I'm like, what is this ailment I have? Anyway, love to see it, buddy. Love to see it. Dwight, we were also talking about how I got a cold plunge, but I can't build my cold plunge, put my cold plunge in my house yet because my wife has overcome my entire house with clothes, which I had to build her a new closet, which isn't done. So I plan to follow Trey's footsteps once again. And once
you remove your wife's clothes,
exactly, dude. When I say she has, well, look, used to own clothing stores, a bunch of clothing stores, and she can't part. She's a hoarder. I call her that. It's like the house of hoarders. We have shit everywhere. Her clothes, every bonus room, you know, we have has her clothes in it. She was like, well, I'm not getting rid of your clothes. Like, you have vices too. Look at all your cars kind of thing. I'm like, eh.
All these first world problems.
Good point. I guess I'll build you a closet. Anyway, Trey, how are you feeling?
Oh man, I'm feeling good. Like a young buck.
Like a young Christmas Thundercat.
Turkey.
That's young right. Thundercat.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
And I'm a step above Snarf. So
Snarf.
I'm trying to build consistency. So I all of my success last year in getting in shape, then I got hurt just like you and I fell off the wagon and then I milked it because I'm old and lazy. And now but I'm finally over the deal of trying to compete with my 20-year-old self.
Yeah.
Which took me 20 more years to actually do. And so now it's consistency. So it's running, it's lifting, you know, you'll do the rucks, I'll play tennis, I'll play whatever sports, whatever. But I want to make sure it's a constant smattering of things to shock the body.
You haven't gotten in any kind of biohack. You haven't done any stem cell injections or anything like that, have you?
No, I've looked into it, but I've never actually done it.
Yeah. I know a couple people have done it recently, obviously traveling overseas. And man, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy the amount, you know, I don't know how much is placebo, but man, it's crazy to see the regeneration in these folks. So,
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
right.
You know, people that have granted it's anecdotal, but they said, yeah, major difference.
Oh yeah. Like avoided surgery kind of thing. Right.
Nice.
You know, so you got to go, I think to have it done, Dwight, you would know a lot more about this probably, but I think there's place like my father-in-law went over to a place in Texas, but I don't think it was like your own stem cells. I think it was like fetal ones. And I don't agree with that kind of like, I don't know that the right terms anymore, but you know, I want the autogenous ones. Is that the right word? I want the ones that are your own body, your own, that you had to create. So, you know, I had my bone marrow harvested when I was in my 40, 41 years old. for that reason. And it was more of an insurance policy. I've talked about that on the pod, but I think there'd be some therapeutic things down the way. It was more of an insurance policy for like, hey, if you get leukemia down the way or some kind of, you know, something happens where you need to kind of rewind. But I think there'll be some therapeutic benefits down the way. So they're cryogenically frozen.
Did they go into the back of the hip?
Dude, yes.
How'd that feel?
Not sedated, man. I mean, it goes into your iliac crest. I mean, I went up to Nashville and had it done, and this guy like took a, what are those tools called, Dwight? Trunchers? Trunchers?
Yeah.
Am I runchers? Not runchers. Troger? Maybe Troger. That's what it is. And went in and like you break that little plate on that in your iliac crest.
And they're getting after it. It's a great.
I mean, you're numb, but I wasn't fully numb.
No.
Almost numb.
Yeah,
close to numb.
Dude, it was
not
fun.
It just doesn't feel good when they're kind of grinding something out of your pelvis.
It wasn't even grinding. I mean, once you break past the plate, then it's like they just suck out the...
Yeah, but it's still like breaking the plate is legit.
But it was sore for months after that. All right. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're probably like, hey, I didn't come here for the chit chat. Or maybe you did come for the chit chat. You never know. Yeah. You never know. People like the chit chat. Did you guys, so Dwight, today what we're talking about, and Dwight, you see this a lot because you have a lot of interaction with masterminders. I was asking Trey if in the past he had experience with what I'm about to say. And it's the story from a Harvard Business Review called Who Has the Monkey? Or Whose Monkey Is It? And you're shaking your head because you know it, right? It's a famous story. I think it was published in like 77.
Yeah.
And what I was telling Trey, Dwight, was that I feel like a lot of dentists that we talk to, or even ourselves even, right? We struggle, we learn something, and then we struggle with integration, and we struggle with a delegation, and then we kind of revert back to, oh my God, it's so stressful. My job is so hard, which it is. My job is so hard. This doesn't work here, blah, blah, blah. So there are arts to delegation. There's obviously arts to integration. There's arts to systems, all these things. But I feel like this is a big hack and something that caused me a lot of anxiety or something that caught learning this early in my career would have saved me a lot of time, because I think your bucket of expectations changes when you kind of get this, wrap your head around it. And what I mean by this is, let me just give the example, unless you want to add anything to that, Dwight.
No, keep going on the example because I have a lot to add to this topic. Yeah.
So picture Dr. Smith. He's strolling through his dental practice with the air of a man who's got everything under control. Out of nowhere, his dental assistant, Sarah, bounces up to him, her eyes wide with, we've got a situation, doc. Hey, Dr. Smith, she chirps, trying to mask the urgency in her voice. Quick heads up, we are almost out of composite material. And we might need a little more anesthetic too. Dr. Smith, already picturing the mountain of paperwork ahead on that's already on his desk, feels the weight of the situation that settles on his shoulders now. He flashes Sarah a smile that doesn't quite reach his eyes. Thanks for letting me know, Sarah. I'm swamped right now, but let's put a pin in it, and I'll circle back to you later, okay? They part ways, but the unspoken burden of the dental supplies has now leaped from Sarah to who?
Dr.
Smith. So fast forward later in the day, Sarah pokes her head in Dr. Smith's office, all sunshine and rainbows. Hey, doc, any luck with those supplies? Dr. Smith now is officially the caretaker and the supply monkey. He assures her he's on it, all the wonder whiling when he became the go-to for stocking the supplies. So then there's a team meeting where Dr. Smith, in a moment of deja vu, wraps up with, great job, team. And about those supplies, shoot me an email with you. The supply monkey, ever so sneaky, is back with Sarah and he's got his eyes set on Dr. Smith, ready to leap. So the point is, this was a ChatGPT story, because I never want to miss an opportunity to loop in technology. And I asked ChatGPT, I said, hey, take this Harvard review. But instead of making it nerdy Harvard talk, give me a story about how dentists can give me an analogy to it. And I like that story. It was good enough where I had lived in that scenario once or twice before.
Yeah.
So I will shut up. You guys go now.
This is so good.
Go.
Green light.
This is so good. And I'll be honest with you, this is a huge topic. And this is kind of, I think it's got two categories for me. First and foremost, we are notoriously thinking that because we're, you know, stamped with the doctorate, that we can run our business. And really, for most doctors and most quote unquote entrepreneurs, or what I like to say, the people who are their business, they don't have a business. They believe that they're not only the center of the universe, but they are the one who manages all the monkeys, and that they like to feel special when they're constantly being asked.
Nucleus of everything, right, Dwight?
That's right. And yeah. So they love to be the one who actually collects monkeys.
Guilty.
Until they get to be abused. We are all guilty of this. And all of us got to the point where at some point in time we realized we reintroduced bottlenecks into our organization by allowing ourselves to collect these monkeys. The problem is your organization, in order to grow, means you have to get out of the way. You have to be a team run process. But then on top of that, you can't allow others to think that by them dropping by and telling you about the lack of composite, that they're bringing you a monkey, throwing it on your shoulders, and losing out on the chance to be able to say, well, I don't have to bring you a solution, doc. And I think this is the greatest. We talk about this a lot in the mastermind, where people have teams all over the place where they do not bring them solutions. It's just a non-driven option. It's just like, oh, great. I'm just telling you, I'm the reporter. Okay. I don't need you to be a bunch of journalists going and finding all the problems in the practice. I need you to be proactive solution creators and makers and those types of things.
Trey, has this been an issue with your leadership, your come up, all the things? Tell me about it in your life experience.
Oh, yeah. I think I've always been good at delegation, but then you delegate only to a point and then you realize there's a next level of it. So my team had to learn delegation from me as they got bigger and their teams got bigger. And then you start learning certain things like delegating roles instead of tasks. Or you don't delegate ordering the composite and the lidocaine. You delegate the role of you're in charge of the supply system. Everything is moved on to them. And then when people come in your office, set that monkey down on your desk, which we have always affectionately called that monkey farming. And you come in and go, yeah, okay, got it. Yeah, send me a text. Let me remind me. Send me an email. Let me remind you. And then you end up with the inability to do so because you're doing what you should be doing. That gets into unique ability. You drive forward when you are in your unique ability.
So, there's a difference between, like, look, as you want to have an open door, right? Like, I think Craig talks about that. Like, open door policy, come in whenever, right? And this article or this science about Harvard Review basically says that you cannot have just an open door scenario where anyone can pop in and interrupt at any time and just talk to you about the monkey. You know, and maybe that's different in a corporate world, right? When you're like at a big IBM and, you know, you're a manager and you have subordinates, right? In your dental office, you actually want to befriend these people because you spend a lot of time with them. And I don't mean become friends. I just mean befriend, be friendly, be empathetic to their concerns. And right. And so sometimes, have you guys ever seen how that can be misinterpreted and there can be crossovers in exactly this scenario, meaning just the listening of and understanding of and yeah. For example, going back to that composite story, if that had languished on, she'd been like, doc, I told you about this scenario a week and a half ago.
Right.
Which means that, like, you know, and that's just, Trey, like you're saying, that's a training of your team. So here's the verbiage. Here's the antidote of the verbiage that they recommend in this article. Okay. This is the boss to the subordinate. They keep calling him the subordinate, I think, which is super cringe. Imagine hey, you are my subordinate. But I guess that's the way they talk in corporate.
I'm going to take that on.
I guess they talk like that in corporate.
Totally adorable. Yeah.
It seems weird. All right. Okay. So when the subordinate with the monkey on his or her back and the manager meet at the appointed hour next day, the manager explains these ground rules. Okay. She says this. At no time while I'm helping you with this or any other problem, will your problem become my problem? The instant your problem becomes mine, you no longer have a problem. I cannot help a person who hasn't got a problem. When this meeting is over, the problem will leave this office exactly the way it came in, on your back. You may ask for my help at any appointed time, and we will make a joint determination of what next move will be. But make no bones about it, the problem still remains with you. So a little bit draconian, maybe that's the example.
like a lot draconian.
Well, but I think what they're trying to drive home, as I always say this, is that like, and there's better verbiage. I made that, but like, there's kind of better verbiage. It's like, hey, I know we're talking about this. I want to help you through it. There's probably not an answer today, but just so we're crystal clear, right? And maybe it can be something funny, just so we're clear. Maybe you can even use the monkey, like in your environment, right? Just so we're clear, like you're going to own this and I'm going to help you brainstorm, but like that shouldn't slow this down. And the solution is still yours. Don't think that us talking about it makes us teammates in this, right? Makes us co-owners. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, co-owners. That's well done.
Yeah. Because
a good way to, visualize that too. Because that's a big difference, co-owner versus teammate. Teammates can work on it together.
Yeah, there you go.
You can ask for my help, but I'm not going to own your problem. And some of the things that we do, so we use the visualization of the monkey because it's fun, it's playful, and that's a good way to do it. But another thing you can do in any sort of training or role-playing, take a stuffed animal or something. It's here.
Yeah, this like the physical pass the baton kind of thing.
Only one person has it.
So if
you hand it to me, I'm handing it back. And you do that with questions. I mean, that's your way to make sure that monkey walks right back out.
Do you guys
door.
Have an Dwight? I see you sitting in your corporate office, right? Can anyone come in at any time, or do you have more strict guidelines? And there's no right or wrong. I want to know.
No. So this monkey concept, this has been a huge part of how I do what I do.
Really?
And especially this office here, which is non-clinical, non-patient facing, we fully abide by the monkey rules. I don't know if you've ever, like, the final monkey rules on this, just for the listener, and it's funny because I pulled this up because it was at one of my database things. So and I can run through some of these, but I'm just going to throw them out there. Like, monkeys should be fed or shot.
Yep.
The monkey population should be kept in a maximum number. The manager has time to feed it. So there's a certain amount that we're willing to deal with. Like,
okay.
We don't deal a good example for that. Like, I'll go through and I'll give you an example. Like, we don't do HR issues on Fridays because they're mostly emotional and unnecessary. And by Monday, they're going to be gone. Right.
Look, go back to rule number one first. I want to unpack these because, Dwight, this is great. But go back to number one.
Yeah. So
it says otherwise they will starve to death.
Correct.
Meaning they should be shot or fed. Otherwise, they will starve to death. What does that mean?
Right. So first of all, the monkey has to have some semblance of purpose. A, do we need this monkey at all? Or are you just being dramatic? And is this an unnecessary task that you're using to fill your void of the lack of activity in your role, in your job?
Like, is this an important monkey? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Like, we should shoot that monkey because that monkey is just a bunch of drama, right? It's two people complaining about something and they got to figure it out. And sometimes those monkeys are individuals in the organization that are creating
shot or fed. Okay. Got it.
The other one is fed because this is critical to the core. This monkey problem is critical to the core of who we are and what it is that we do. Quality of patient care, team development and growth, coaching, not managing, these types of things that are core tenets in my organization. Those are monkeys that we need to feed, but I don't actually assign co-ownership, I think is what you said. For me, monkeys are owned by a certain individual in a certain lane and we manage it, but we're willing to allow that monkey for them to get help with that monkey if necessary.
But you're an elevated operator, Dwight. Like you've gone through many degrees of graduation, right? From right. And so now you're at this elevated land. So let's go back. I want to kind of 95% of the people listening, 99% of the people listening are probably more in the you know, there's not a corporate office they're in like you, right? So I want to kind of push it back down into examples of how you maybe used this or started using it to then grow it out.
Yeah.
That make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think that understanding that there's going to be monkeys and some of them are what I like to explain, like what I used to say in my practice when I was clinically practicing is there's a difference between a conflict we actually, you know, have to manage. And then there's a tension. A difference between a tension and a conflict is a tension is September is notoriously slow every year. It does this. People get stressed out because doctors aren't producing as much. They want everybody to call and propose treatment plans. It gets real aggressive. This, but it's a natural tension. So we all have to take a break at morning huddle and say, hey, by the way, like, what can we all do to relieve some of this tension and cause it to calm down? Some of us force people to take vacation during those times. Some of us do rallies during those times. Different things that help us kind of refocus a little and take advantage of that. But that's a natural tension that's going to happen, and it's going to happen every year, or it's going to happen on Fridays. Everybody's stressed out from the week. Let's watch out what we do on Fridays. Let's not let each other get hyped up by the end of the day, right? We forced all doctors to go down to 4 days a week. Most of our team now goes 4 days a week. Why? Because they created natural tensions that by the fifth day, it was overwhelming. So yeah, these are some of the things that we started implementing across protocols to make sure that there were less monkeys necessary in that.
Hey, docs, how many times have you gone to a meeting only to come home to be served with a bunch of friction on all the things that you learned, right? The team didn't participate in the education that you got. Therefore, now you're coming home and the team is saying, hey, just give them till Thursday. It'll go away. So why not flip that on its head, right? Why don't you bring your team to the Bulletproof Summit? It's gonna be in June 14th and 15th, where you're gonna learn and innovate with your team. You're gonna create massive alignment, and I promise you, it's where the rubber is gonna meet the road. So join us again, bulletproofsummit.com, and we'll see you this summer. By the way, it's so funny. I don't know if you guys have ever dealt with this, but everyone you have ever told, like, hey, yeah, we don't work Fridays or Mondays, and like everyone's like, oh, must be nice to be a dentist. I should have been a dentist. Do you guys hear that shit?
Yeah. All the time.
It drives me like, God, I should have been a dentist. I was like, yeah, it was super easy. I went to school for like 20 years, went in like $1 million of debt, got, you know, never slept soundly in the past 30 years, but it's been super easy. Like, yeah, you should do what I do. It's super easy.
Should have done it.
Just do that path.
Do it now.
Do it now.
Do it now.
Go for it.
Anyway, sorry to derail that. I just had that happen two times today, literally two times today.
Yeah.
All right, Dwight. So number two, rule number two, the monkey population should be kept below the maximum number that you have time to feed. Okay. So obviously with that, you're saying there's a bandwidth to the problems we can do, right?
That's correct.
We either kill some of these damn monkeys, but we don't bring in new ones to the zoo.
And the other part of it is, as funny as that sounds, the other part of it is also like, limit the amount of time. And I think this is the most common problem in dentistry. Limit the amount of time you're willing to talk about the monkey.
Ooh, I like that.
Because I think you get to the point where that's how you population control monkeys. And you're like, sounds good. I'm booking a meeting. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I noticed you booked a meeting for an hour. This is a 15-minute conversation. And you've got to be able to say, great, we're moving on to the next topic. And this comes often in the sense that we feel like we have to accommodate our team or hear them out or listen to them.
Or time expands the amount of time you've given it, right? Or your conversation expands, right? Yeah. You just start mentally masturbating.
Absolutely. That's it. Yeah. That's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. That ends up being a huge deal in, say, an office meeting where, let's say you have a once a month staff meeting. And we always talk about the windshield. You look forward through the big windshield and backwards, this little bitty rear view. But what do we do in a staff meeting? You sit and talk about problems. You talk about monkeys, and suddenly those roles reverse. And then a month later, you sit down and have the exact same conversation on the exact same problems, and you got nowhere. So limit the time.
For people of progress, like, you know, I love a progress. We all love it, right? And for people who love that and want forward progression, I would rather slam my pinky in a car door than sit around and like just like talk about something and then talk about it again in a month without any kind of forward movement or delegation or ownership. But you're right, Trey. It happens.
That's how you make the conversations pithy. Is you get ahead of it and you say, great, this is the amount of time we're going to spend on this. And we're going to talk about the next step and the next process, because it's not going to happen all at once. And I think that's the flow that's required.
That's where I actually, Dwight, I stole that sheet from you guys when I was there visiting your operations, was just that progress sheet with some of my leadership and management, and just kind of like getting a quick update through the Excel doc is like, where are we on the progression? Are you guys familiar with Gantt charts, Dwight? I'm sure you are. Trey, you too, probably.
Yeah.
I think, and that's why I love a Gantt chart. If you don't know what a Gantt chart, look it up. G-A-N-T-T.
TT.
But it's great when you're kind of doing project management because it shows you progression and timelines as things could currently move across the space of time.
Right.
I know we're all going all over the place here, but I want you to talk about rule number three, Dwight.
Yeah,
monkeys
so rule number three
should is only be fed by appointment only.
Yeah. What I love about this is what he was just talking about. It's like, great, let's set some time. Let's make this happen. Let's turn it all down. But it's a structured time because if you just leave the door wide open and it just says, all right, I'm just going to sit here and wait for people to come in with monkeys. Okay. What I find is you're getting the emotional reaction to the monkey, not the actual monkey, right? So the problem isn't going to be solved. It's you're first solving the emotions that the individual has carried about the fact that they're carrying a monkey, meaning there's a problem in the office, something's going on, like the supply, right? And they're allowed to drop that on you at any point in time, right? And that's a big, big problem. Right. So you've got to set a certain time in which you're going to feed the monkey and have a conversation about the situation.
Love it. And you know what Craig would add in here at this point? A, that we're talking with broad brushstrokes.
For sure.
And B, he would say, I think this is a good antidote for just lost it now. See, it's hard to be Craig. It's this fleeting thoughts. He would basically say the antidote for the monkey collector, right? Like he probably doesn't have the same amount of monkeys that I aggregated in my timeline because I was very quick to jump to do this. And okay. And giving the solutions, which trained people to come back and say, well, that was cool and quick. And I got the answer. You know, Craig would pause people and say, well, what do you think you should do? So over time, I got the same amount of monkeys or more, metaphorically speaking, and Craig got less because he's basically saying that he taught people over time how to think for themselves, solution for themselves, potentially, right? Meaning if someone had come to him, he'd say, well, what do you think is the right way to approach this? What do you think you should have said here? What do you think this patient wanted?
I think when a leader in any organization, but a dentist, especially in a dental office, learns to stop answering the question about halfway through the question.
Fuck, it's hard.
And they look at him and they say, oh, what do you think? And you shut up.
That's the next level of leadership. Is that what you're saying, Dwight?
Yes, you just shut up. And
that's when it just feels so inefficient. I struggle with this so much.
But when I look at people and I just say, here's the deal. You really want to grow your practice without doing anything different, empower your team. And not only that, your quality of life will skyrocket.
Yeah.
No,
but it's just a matter of just saying, get out of their way. And the best way to do that is literally say, what do you think? And
it's asking a question.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing at that point in time, the way I think about that to kind of overcome Pete, your dilemma of I want this done, I want it done now. And you want to just move on to the next step. I always look at it as this is development. This is individual development, personal development, team development. And as when you view it that way, it becomes what Dwight said. They come and start to ask questions, talk about this. You ask a question. You put it, it's what Craig's doing. He's asking a question. Well, what do you
think? Yeah, that is an investment. As I think about that in hindsight, you know, massive regret with a lot of the things I've done probably. And I wish someone had said, look, the ounce of prevention, pound of cure, right? If you just lean in and let this kind of use the time here as a teaching moment and leadership moment, as opposed to just moving on to the next thing, you won't have as many things come down your pipeline down there. And yeah, you're going to have a more empowered team, right? So that is I totally get how that is as we talk about the levels of leadership, who is it? John Maxwell's levels of leadership. You can see how that is an elevation of leadership. It's just pausing. And like you guys are saying, and saying, hey, what do you think? You know, that's why Craig's such a great leader, honestly. He really is. And he really makes people feel good around him and they feel like they're growing around him. And that's just a great takeaway. Let me ask number four. You can just tell how how old this article is by rule number four. Monkeys should be fed face to face by telephone, but never by mail. Can you imagine writing someone a mail?
So good.
This is obviously before texting.
But
so
I also agree with this.
Never
with
before texting. but never by texting. How about that?
I don't believe you talk about monkeys over email, because I've had a lot of leaders in my organization that feel that they can just move their monkey digitally to somebody else.
A digital monkey now.
Via text or email. And I do not allow that to happen. I'm like, oh, never got it. Sorry, not going to work. You've got to talk to me about it. We have to set time aside to be able to, if you're going to change the accountability and responsibility to someone else, it has to be in a one-on-one scenario, unless if it's following a set protocol, like a linear protocol, like my accounts receivable team does something. They send it back to the
client. I didn't even think about digital monkeys, honestly.
Angela knows she's pretty aggressive on some of these things. My director of operations, but we talk about digital monkeys all the time. I'm like, not only did you send me a digital monkey, this monkey's already dead, because by the time I got to it on my email box, like, it's a dead monkey. There's nothing we can do to resuscitate the situation. And it's because you think that that means I'm getting it the second you're sending it. And that does not resolve these types of problems.
It's the equivalent of a post-it note.
It's on your desk. Therefore you own it. We should be calling it a post-it note, not a monkey, right? Like, if that
it's an NFT of a post-it note. That's what it is. That's what we're doing. It's a crypto punk.
It's a crypto punk. It's an NFT. I put a non-fungible token on your desk, Doc. Fungible. What a great word to say.
That is a good word.
Last one. Every monkey should have an assigned next feeding time and degree of initiative, right? And Dwight, you just kind of unpacked that.
You know what? I'm going to point out, Chris Tuff used to always ask, and he
by when?
By when?
Yeah,
by when?
He was great. He's
because
great at that.
So good question. About that. And I beautiful love that question. Because it was kind of like, here's great. We've talked about this monkey for 15 minutes. By when are you going to have this and this and this on these components that you've said are good solution options evaluated? And then we'll follow up, we'll meet, and we'll go through it.
That is a great question. Just, I want to give Chris Tuff a little bit of shout out. That is one of the greatest questions, not only that you can ask someone who you've been kind of waiting for results in your business, but also ask yourself, like Trey, like, by when am I getting, you know, that six pack that you've been wanting, right? Or have right now, like, you know, and like, it's a way to just keep this like massive accountability and understanding. And I feel like, you know, I'm going to maybe struggle with this example. Some of my frustrations in leadership came because I came with like, hey, here's my bucket of expectations of things that I, you know, I'm talking to you about. And I feel like you're going to come back and bring me that same bucket and everything's going to be full and glorious. And when things are returned, What I didn't do right is communicate my level of understanding or my level of expectation. And then it came back and it was completely different, and which to throw up my hands, shit, no one cares, no one listens. And it was really like, right, the finger was pointing back at me. Yeah. So the by when is just a great thing to put you all on the same level of expectations. Like, hey, we should go on vacation together. All right, by when? You know, hey, I should get a sick pack. Hey, but you know, I don't know, whatever it is. I just think that can apply all universally. It's a great thing to add into your repertoire of conversation, not only with yourself, not only with your team, but with your friends and family that you're like, hey, we should get lunch sometime. Hey, let's grab coffee. Now, granted, some of those times you say that, you really don't ever want to grab coffee with that person. You just do it so you can be getting out of the situation.
Yeah.
But if someone throws that back on you, you're like, oh, shit.
It's like a legit thing you can sign up for.
Well, actually, anyone who throws that back on me, I'm going to be like, huh, interesting. They're kind of like you now. I'll go grab coffee with you. You're my people.
I'm going to point out something because I think it's interesting from your C-suite level position, kind of what you're saying as far as the level of expectations that we put out there, how we communicate that. Like everything we've talked about in this pod at this point in time, like you don't have a trusting team that says you're willing to let them carry the monkey, try to find the solution. And even if you're failing, we're going to try and wait, kind of resuscitate that monkey and solve these problems. Like that's the biggest component. The number one thing I love to tell people that are new to the organization is that when there's a gap between expectation and your experience in the organization, how something went, you don't actually see the whole vision. You don't see what everybody's doing. You don't understand that. But in your expectation, there's a gap there. We ask them to fill it with trust. Trust the team. Trust that the process is moving forward. Trust, like be questioning it, go through it. but don't fill it with suspicion or a sense of negativity, like, oh, that person just is lazy and doesn't want to follow through with the work, or, you know, they don't want to help me with this monkey, or do all these things. Like, other people, Peter Bolden is a busy guy. He's got a lot on his schedule. So I know I'm going to try and gather this information as much as I can, but I want to bring it back. Or the office manager is really, really busy. So I try and teach the team to think about the fact that there's always going to be a gap between what's expected, your personal expectations on how to fulfill a solution of the monkey, and what your actual experience ends up being. But you've got to fill that gap with trust.
I think, yeah, I completely agree with you, Dwight. I think this is something, again, you know, I talk about all this stuff. We just had a conversation about the things they don't teach you in dental school, right? And this would fall under, you know, we obviously know we don't get business. That's almost a meme at this point, right?
Right.
But one of the other things that would be vital to learn is like leadership tips like this, and communication styles, and like explanations on the front end, and monkey. Like, this would be a great, like, they're learning this in Harvard Business School because, like, that is what it is. It's a business tactic, and they don't prepare you for the business domain, which means leadership and, you know, standardization of things and all the things like that, right? Outside of the clinically, it's just here, you're clinically prepared. Go out in the wild now.
Good luck.
You know, good luck. And then Dennis like, God, this stinks out here. I thought I was going to be able to prep teeth and go home, not have to deal with all this stuff. Box of monkeys on my desk. Exactly. I was going to bring up something. God, I have a million thoughts on this.
Where to go?
Yeah, it's fleeting. It's fleeting today for some reason. But you know, I've had this. I have an ongoing Trello board, guys, of like, just whenever I see a tweet or something that I'm like, oh, this would be a great podcast, and like, I just add it too. And I swear, I've had this monkey one on for 3 years now. And I just was like, yeah, it's not juicy enough to be its own pod, but it's so, as we've kind of unpacked it, it's like, without doing it, you're going to have a life of frustration. As if you're the apex predator in your world, right? And you're trying to grow, or you're trying to do this, it will become the ultimate source of frustration. If you don't master this early on, take it from a guy who did not, if you don't master this early on, it will cause you a lot of strife.
Yeah. Monkeys are just a sense of understanding. Big picture. The sense of understanding. This is ownership. Ownership.
And this is actionable.
With purpose.
So actionable, Trey. You're right.
Like, this is something
you can implement this tomorrow.
And you can have it's empowerment. It's what Dwight keeps saying. That there's a reason why the word empowerment keeps getting associated with this, because what you're doing is trusting your team to handle the situation. Mm-hmm. And that's trusting them to solve it, to find it, to squash it, kill it, shoot it, feed it, starve it, whatever one you're going to do.
Or just like,
or fail.
Or just like, okay, yeah, too. Or leave me out of the zoo. Like, I don't want to, you know, like, figure it out. Don't bring every monkey to me, kind of thing. And I think that's where I was going with that Craig example. But when you're the nucleus, and this goes into the nucleus of everything, when we talk about, you know, one of the big problems of dentistry is you're the nucleus of everything. And then you feel important. It feels good in the beginning, Dwight. And then it becomes your source of, oh my God, it's your own personal jail. I'm never going to escape this because I have no free time, and I've got to be the clinical produce leader, and I've got to do this. And you know, everyone's unhappy with my team's unhappy. My family's unhappy. No one's getting enough of my time, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That leads to the who, not how.
That leads to the who, not how. Exactly right.
Read the book. And
all of us coached doctors, and every time I don't like my team, come to realize they're the ones who created the zoo. They're the ones who created a scenario where
the
like,
doctors are the one that created the
doctors are the ones that created the zoo for their team. And this is why they don't like their team. It's because they were trying to be the solution to everyone. And then they got tired of being the solution for everyone. But they're the one who created an environment where everybody's relying on you to be their crutch to make the solution. So
that's where I was going with it. It's not just about us. That's where I was going with the basket of expectations, is that no one is coming and bringing you me like, ha ha ha, I'm sneaking this monkey in. But to the same example I gave with Sally, right? So bear with me on this, guys, is that she feels, and through no fault of her own, she feels like she shared that with you. And now she's having to follow up. She doesn't look at it as a custody thing. Like, oh, I'm giving the monkey. She just like, hey, you told me you put a pin in that and then you never followed back up. So now she's a little disgruntled that, oh, Doc's too busy. My concerns aren't his concerns. He dropped the ball, right? So now there's this like, and then Doc on there and it's like, wait a second, I don't own this problem. How am I now the subordinate kind of thing? And it's like, this is where the resentment and apathy starts growing, unfortunately, probably. Yep.
You broke the circle of trust.
Yeah. Trust tree. This is great. Yeah. So words of wisdom from the
old guys on the pod.
Master this.
We didn't master it.
Do it.
No, not us. I'm not saying we've mastered it. I'm just saying we at least have enough success leaves clues, right? We at least have enough clues to say, yeah, this was a big thing. Don't skip over this. Don't skip over this. Yeah. Trey, as we wrap this pod, because right, I don't want to just expand this pod in the time we have allotted. I feel like we've done a very comprehensive job. We've explained it. We've given someone action. So we're gonna stop with the monkeys.
All right.
I do want to hear what's going on in your worlds collectively. From like, we're gonna zoom out. And Trey, you were saying how you've got an example how you've basically bought a practice, selling a practice. You're kind of in the market of build, grow, expand, sell potentially if the right thing comes along. You will do a way better job of explaining that. But tell me what you were telling me before we hit record.
So I've touched on this in some previous pods here or there, but basically what I've started looking at as a sustainable model long-term is bring, and for those of you that have been to my organization or listened to this and know me, my model is usually geared around new graduates. Mm-hmm. And we pull them in and we train them up, and you take them from can't find their ass with two hands to very good clinicians and good doctors. And in some cases, whether it be build a startup around them or purchase and have overlap between old doc and new doc, so they have some mentorship plus our training. And as that transition happens, they start to build practices and drive forward. But my personal enjoyment of what I do is obviously the development, but at the same time, I hate maintaining. So same. I love building, I love creating. Once I get to maintaining, I just want to be done with it. So what I've started doing is, and a lot of it's based in math and finance and all these other fun little equations. But basically, there's a point at which I'm no longer interested, and the doc in the practice is the best to benefit from that. So I am selling my first practice to one of the docs at this point in time, in the next month or so. And then what I'm doing is taking that and buying another one, which closes next week.
Trey, question. In totality, yes, selling it, keeping a little bit of the equity, nope, being partners?
I want
in totality.
Cut. In totality, I want nothing to do with it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm clean cutting everything. I am taking that with defined, pay some debt, build some war chest, allocate it to something else, and I'm driving forward in the next chapter, so to speak.
Is this Dwight Pecora approved, just out of curiosity? Not that it matters, Trey.
Are you asking me or Dwight?
I'm asking Dwight as he was sitting there, like, I could see all the thoughts, and I want to see. This is why I love dentistry, by the way. There's so many tributaries you can go down about. This is my tactic, and it works. Obviously, it's working for you.
Hey, everybody. Registration is now open for our 7th annual summit. Is that right, Peter? Our 7th?
7th.
That's crazy. This time at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale, Arizona, you can immerse yourself in innovation, inspiration, unite your team, which is most important, and at the same time, earn 16 CE credits. Renew your practice, transform your life, June 14th and 15th. Registration's now open. Don't delay. These things always sell out. This one will as well. Go to bulletproofsummit.com. 2 days that will redefine your practice life. We guarantee it.
Dwight, what do you think about this?
I think that Trey is doing a really good job right now of doing infrastructure evaluation because he knows where he's going. And so right now he's got some thorns in the method of going through it. And when something is that disruptive, like, we all have to get to the point that in order to grow and scale a business, we can't just keep adding. We have to learn to maintain. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means, you know, push off something that is too thorny. And just as an what my team loves me saying and hears me saying, that's an excessive use of administrative resources.
Mm.
And sometimes that's an individual.
Which means the juice ain't worth the squeeze.
And sometimes, well said. There you go, buddy. Well I did said. That for you. And sometimes it's a whole practice and the way the culture and then everything. And it's either a full reset of that organization and do a new kind of reset of that practice, or it's a purge. And that's what he's doing.
Trey, let me ask you this though. If you liked it, let's just say there were no thorns.
He wouldn't be selling it if he liked it.
Would you keep some equity? Would you stay, right? Like,
I don't want to keep equity.
Interesting.
I will hold the whole thing in totality, or I will.
Yeah, Trey's an all or nothing guy, though. Wow. You're talking about
see, like
core.
I'm a big JV guy. I'm a big like joint venture. Like I like I'll provide the fertile ground and help, and then you take off with it, and we'll run together. But when I say run, I mean mainly you. You know.
Yeah. So that works. If you have someone that understands that process, but well, I don't want to
and
share.
Also understands the value on the front end, Trey. Like people very mm-hmm. often forget about like, what have you done for me lately kind of thing. They forget like, yes. Oh, I forgot that you put down all that money and leaned into all this time and created all these things, right? Like they don't value you when they feel like they're yeah. on third base and they think they're the ones that hit the triple, yep, right?
It's ninth
like,
inning
well,
memory.
You didn't really hit the triple, put you there and we're running to home together, right? Like that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, and comfort suddenly becomes, yeah, time, ninth inning memory. You can't remember what happened the first three mm-hmm. innings because the only thing that matters is right now and you're taking half my profit or you're doing this or you're not doing this. But for me, I like the what's funny is when I first started everything, I had a whole bunch of maxims that I threw out to, you know, I just threw out there on paper, looked at it, and I was like, this is what I'm going to build. And one of them, as I you go back and read through a lot of them, one of them was, build the smallest model that throws off a lot of cash and duplicate it over and over again. And what's funny is over time, I've gotten down to a very small model. And now I'm almost only seeking that small model. And I want to play in a sandbox where nobody wants. It's blue ocean. But it's blue ocean because nobody wants it. So a four-op practice that does 500,000, nobody's going to buy that. They're everywhere. Because everyone tells you you need six or you need five or you need eight or whatever it is. But I'll take it all day long. And then I put systems and develop systems to where that can now cash flow. That can have a great system for the doc. I can build a team and then dump
why
it.
Why did you go
on.
With this? Why was your thesis, I want to seek the smallest that puts out the pound for pound? What was that your thesis for? Why?
So a good answer to that question is the big difference between a Dwight and a me. Dwight builds an infrastructure to handle a $30 million operation, and that is a motivation for him to build the $30 million operation and grow into the infrastructure. And I agree with that in the sense of I don't outpace my infrastructure, but what I'm trying to do is keep the smallest infrastructure that I can possibly run with to manage what I have. And if you look at the practices that I have that are the large ones, the big machines, they take their, what Dwight says is the administrative waste of administrative resources. It's excessive. And yet it doesn't, if you really look at our model now on the small levels, because I'm obsessive over data and I'm obsessive over systems now. But if you look at that, the reversion to the mean, as I get separated more in presence from some of these bigger practices, they are in essence just a linear scaled, so to speak, and I'm using that as a bad word, version of the smaller
offices. Ones. Yes.
Yep. And I don't want linear. I want asymmetric. And asymmetric happens by lack of my necessary time. So I'm driving forward.
Wait, so you feel like there's an asymmetry to the investment of that? And in terms of your time and your capitalization event after?
Just the asymmetry of my involvement versus the, let's go base.
I see.
Just the money I put in my pocket is dramatic when I keep the model small and I duplicate them over and over again.
He wants practices with the minimal number of monkeys on a scalable basis.
And correct. He wants those monkeys, those zoos separated.
All individualized.
Am I right, Trey?
They are 100%. Their own infrastructure. Does that make sense?
You got it.
So that is like the opposite, right? Obviously, we all know why, how DSOs and private equity have gone about this approach. It's like, hey, let's centralize, let's join, let's have economies of scale, let's share equipment, let's share procedures, let's share intel, all the things. And Trey, you're saying, I see your economies of scale, and I have data that proves for my world that something else works.
Yep. Correct.
Is that accurate?
That's 100% accurate.
That's and super cool,
it gets,
dude.
It gets really detailed, which come to the cabana at the
summit.
What cabana?
Pre-booked cabana by the pool.
Yeah, wait.
For those who don't know me, I don't go to day two of anything, including Bulletproof.
Oh my God.
So I book cabanas, and day two, I go to the cabanas. And I invite, I would say invite only, but it's come all. And we sit down.
How big is this cabana you speak of?
I don't know. I haven't seen him
yet. He's got two.
But one last time was not enough. So I'm going two this time.
Trey, you realize this is a complete opposition to what we say about keeping people in the environment of learning. I mean, they're going to learn a lot in your cabana, but you know, we kind of need people in the. Like, I can't believe I'm giving this oxygen, but I do say, I do reflect back, and you do learn.
You can't come unless you're at Bulletproof. So
right,
go to Bulletproof.
Right. So that is the gateway. The gateway drug is Bulletproof.
It's a gateway drug, yeah.
The passcode for the secret stuff is Trey Tippett.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. But basically the model, which, you know, at any point in time, actually Trey Miller came down here a couple weeks ago and we were going through the model of how you could apply it to his practice at a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
And you start going through that process of man, this works at scale. There are problems.
Yeah.
Some are problems that are not solvable. And I have not found someone to solve this, and except for one situation, it's to sell it. And so then it becomes a revolving door of buy one, sell one. But what it really is, sell one, buy two.
And that
expands, and then it becomes exponential, which exponential growth becomes asymmetric.
But Trey, let's just assume like you're at a place where like you don't need, it's not like you're buying a building, meaning you're not putting cash down in these acquisitions, or maybe you are, but like it's not a requirement for your level of net worth and banking relationships, right? As long as the EBITDA can support that purchase, the bank shouldn't care if, you know, like you don't need that dry powder from deal number one to go buy two, is what I'm saying. So like,
correct.
I don't want to confuse that is you levering up back up, because you could probably take 100% leverage as it was.
Yes, that's correct. However, there is a point at which, not wanting to bring in outside capital that I can't control, that's a way for me to control my total exposure to a bank, chase senior money from the bank, and never have to give up the ability to say, I'm operating in my, you know, I'm, it's my freedom. It's my choice. So it is not so much to solve that problem. It does.
I was just clarifying because someone hearing that may say, well, shit, that's a cool path. Okay.
It's a cool path that you have to develop really well though, because I mean, here's one problem. Hey, it's time to sell it, and you are the buyer. I don't want it. Oh shit. Mm. Okay, now what?
Now what?
Well, that's okay. You maintain it. Or, I mean, if you want to get ruthless in the deal, it's then okay. Let me find another buyer. But there are other issues. But the model itself is pretty. That's, I've gotten way into that, and now I'm starting to duplicate
pretty
that model.
Pretty what, Trey?
I've gotten pretty into it. I've been pretty.
You said
deep
the model itself
the,
is pretty.
It's solid.
Bulletproof.
It's real solid. It could be bulletproof. It's bulletproof.
I think I have a button for that.
Yeah. See what he did there?
Yeah. No, I don't have one. I don't have one. I don't use the buttons.
But yeah, I think that's kind of what I thought. My game is sustainability. I want to play this game for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to develop a lot of people and teams, and I want to build a big business. And I want to do so at my own
behest.
Yeah, but
you're not building them big by flipping them, though.
I will build a big one by flipping it. My argument would be I will build a bigger one because I am doing some of this.
I have an easy time aggregating things. I have a hard time selling things.
I've never done it. So I'll tell you next month how it feels.
Okay.
I may be in your camp, and this
may
end.
I'm a good collector of things, hence like the story in the beginning, like the cars and the building, you know, like I'm not good at like parting with things. I don't know if emotionally I get wrapped around them.
I'm a hardcore minimalist.
So what, any closing thoughts?
No, it's funny because my whole world right now is infrastructure building and.
It's almost like the exact, not the exact opposite, because there are some commonalities, right? Yeah. But isn't it great how you and Trey are friends, mentors of each other, right? And equally have the same amount of chops, and you've chosen different route, right? For the next foreseeable whatever. And eventually maybe you guys come back and converge. Maybe your processes converge, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a greater Houston, something.
There's so much to learn. And so Dwight and I learn from each other in huge ways because he sees holes in what I'm doing and vice versa. So when you start looking at it from that standpoint, you think, man, all this does is patch up these holes, find the places we need to really focus. It's, hey, let me throw this your way, tear it apart. Let me see what I can do with it. That's the beauty of it, because this is me being me and him is his operation is him being him. And obviously you're the same. So.
Yes. And I think we go through periods where you self-reflect and you say, is this what I really want? Right. Versus like, and then you change. And the cool thing is you've got the permission to kind of pivot and change. I've done that several times. Dwight, what's going on in your world? What are you?
Yeah, so we are just added one practice. We're closing on a second one next month. So that'll be fun. I'm also infrastructure developing like crazy. I love to find the bottlenecks at which I can go faster to upload. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of practices, and I say no when I know it's going to negatively affect other practices. So we do a conglomerate. We're not isolated in silos. And we are all tethered to that central infrastructure, and we are a partnership. So, you know, that's what's different between what Trey and I do.
Yeah, you're like the JV model, the private DSO, essentially.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so one of the areas that I can scale most everything operational and infrastructure-wise pretty easily. The one area that we really struggle with sometimes is revenue cycle management. Everything from credentialing and from insurance AR and from insurance verification and all that drama and all that non-patient facing stuff. I'm just sick and tired of trying to kind of build that at scale and slowly but surely. So I'm actually, they're here right now, ironically, that's why I was late to the pod, but I'm meeting with them and I'm actually buying one of the larger revenue cycle management companies right now that's in the US, and so I'm working on that.
Last question for you guys, and then we'll wrap. It's just, you made me think of something, Dwight, and I heard this on there's a guy that lives kind of near me. His name is his last name is Huber, not Huberman, but he's the storage guy, the sweaty startup guy. Mm-hmm. He's up big on Twitter. Anyway, he's a part of this group called Shepherd, and Shepherd is outsourcing. And so I was listening to something they were doing and I was listening to a pod he was on, and he was basically talking about all the benefits of outsourcing some of your work and you can to overseas, and how that, you know, the COVID thing proved that model could work because everyone did work from home. Why does it matter if you're working from home or working from Zimbabwe? Right. Yeah. Are you out? Sorry for that little, I just want to give some context to why I'm asking this. Yeah. Are you in your scale up, right? In your centralization, are you outsourcing anything? And you don't have to answer this if you don't want.
Yeah. So
but are you looking at that?
I used to outsource a lot.
Outsource to another company. Meaning not like look at, hey, let me find this company that outsources this help to overseas, but are you physically using your Latin American context potentially to source, and where you're the boss. There's no like proxy via this company that we use that does it. It's you're the boss of it. Yes. You are.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And not only that, like between South America and Asia, I am, but then on top of that, this organization, this revenue cycle company that I'm buying, of all the employees, about 40% of them are international 1099. And so they, and even the people that are national and are W-2, they're in 9 different states. And so it's easy for me to take on payroll for what will now be, because I'm in a couple states now, but like it's easy for me to take it on for 12 states, no problem. And so all the infrastructure is easy for me, but that is what makes them super successful, is they've kind of really structured this remote work method, and it's international or it's national, it doesn't matter, but you find different structures, and that's teeter-tottering. Like, how are we using the world's availability and using AI, but it just can't get it to the level that it needs to be taken.
So I'm glad actually this leads into one more thing, is that I'm having a call this week about someone about kind of AI. And Trey, remember that podcast we talked about, you and I were talking about Synthesia?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's a whole skip ahead. I think the next phase of disruption, is kind of like intelligent AI, you know, unmistakable call center for dentistry. Right. Mm-hmm. And, look, maybe not for dentistry. I don't know. I struggle with this because you lose some things. Someone will do it in dentistry, whether it's this giant conglomerates. But Dwight, to your point, I think it's a matter of if not when. And I don't know if
it's by when. And a lot of it for me is, in order to get to the when, I need to own the process so that I can be on the forefront of making some of that happen. That's why.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. I've got a call with a guy. I watched a video and saw like just a discovery call about like, is this technology actually doable? Because right, like I have all these scripts and all these things, and here's how you answer the phone call. And like, I would love to load that into something that, you know, was indistinguishable from a human. And I just don't know if the tech is there yet. Remember if we've played that thing, that example in summits, many summits before of the Google, and I think this is probably 3 or 4 years old, but it was that thing of the Google making the hair appointment example. You remember that thing? And I forget what it was called, but it was Google's, it was at their yearly meeting and everyone's woo now. And it was amazing. And it was 4 or 5 years ago. So just imagine with the half-life of technology where it is. So there's things that will happen. I think it'll probably be this year, as a matter of fact. But I will update you guys on where we were, what comes from that call. And I'll tell you, because this guy's supposed to know all the tech in that space of call centers, dialogue. And if it's just too janky, then obviously you don't want to destroy the hard-earned dial that you paid lots of marketing dollars to get by someone answering and now getting a quote-unquote computer. So there's, but at the same time, all of the people answering our phones are overwhelmed and not using their time to the highest and best because they're getting caught on X, Y, and Z. And, you know, so it's all these things. So sorry, my brain's just literally going. Trey, well, we caused
crazy
a big
about that. That was 7 years ago. I just
seven.
That
I see. I guess
seven.
Five.
Seven? Yeah. Yeah. 7
That's
years
wild,
ago.
Isn't it?
So it gives you an idea of like the pace at which some of this is matriculating to get to the point where it's actually effective, right? To the point that we can get it to an isolated industry. Like,
I feel like it's that. This year. I feel like it's going to happen this year.
It's fast and slow. And that's, you know, that's the thing you have to keep in mind, is it's like a ChatGPT. Awesome to use, but it's like parlor tricks still. You still have a lot of people using it only at that standpoint. I'm saying that's what it is. Oh. I'm saying 99% of people are using it for that, as opposed to what you could be using it for. And then you don't experience past it. You don't look for the Synthesias. You don't look for the Clays or the Obsidians or all these other kind of cool AI tools and what could be implemented.
Yeah, you just need like basic core replacement stuff that you don't need to be. Yeah, I hear you. Trey, you and I caused on our short, I got a lot of text messages about your and my quote unquote argument on the shorts. My wife was like, you guys were arguing. Look how uncomfortable Craig is. I was like, trust me, he's not uncomfortable. And we weren't really arguing.
What? So
Dwight,
what were
I don't
the
even
comments?
Know if you were there. It's when I was in Switzerland and that was the pod. And we were talking about, Trey said, it was advice to dental students. Like don't, and my advice was live lean. Don't take all this money they're giving you.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was there.
Yeah, that's right. You were there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trey was like, bullshit. Take all of it. Take all of it because I will lever up and create massive amounts of wealth from this. And I was like, yeah, but that's you, not someone else. You know, and that's not a dental student. And she, anyway, my wife was just, she was like, golly, you guys were arguing. I was like, No, we weren't. And actually, we're grown men. We're capable of like getting into it. You know, I know women can't do that, or else without fear of feelings,
without shunning each other for a week and a half. So, what were the comments based on content, or were they based on the arguments?
It was. Hey, yeah, I agree. Like the amount of debt's gotten out of control, and it only Trey's argument only works with Trey because he can make money from money soldiers, right? Right, and so it was just, you know, it's people. It's their confirmational bias. They're just believing in what they think. But I'm sure you've gotten, I don't know if you've got any feedback from it at all, but
I've gotten personal feedback from it from people that have listened and then actually,
right. And then they're like, Trey, that's great advice. Right. Like, so it's the same, the same bias. It's awesome. But I love it. I love it. Trey had asked me, Dwight, before we hit record, I said, all right, I'm going to say this is episode 344. And he was like, damn. He's like, this shit could hold. I was like, actually, it's really, it's equally as stimulating now. It's just more comfortable, right? Because you've done a lot, but it's seriously one of the biggest like fulfillment areas of my life. Like I really enjoy talking to you guys and questioning things and preparing content and, you know, for hopefully the benefit of dentistry or someone listening to it. So anyway,
absolutely
gratitude to you both, actually.
That's good stuff.
Likewise, man. Right back at you. You bet.
It's the greatest time to be in dentistry, period.
I'm hearing this a lot, actually, Dwight. I know I keep saying we're going to wrap.
I agree.
But I have been told this, that dentistry is about to have this kind of renaissance because of the pent up. People have been on the sidelines with their investments or whatever, but like there's going to be a renaissance of investment into dentistry in the next couple of years, whether that's private equity or you getting the deal. But there's like everyone contends there's like a 2-year window where it's going to be good. By the way, did you know that veterinary roll-ups are trading at like 24 times earnings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got a buddy who just did 27 times.
That's crazy.
And I asked the guy who told me this, who had massive experience in the space. I said, what is more retentive than dentistry? Right. Meaning they don't have a recurring, like I don't take my dog. I mean, I take him for a checkup, like when I think about it, but there's like not, it's not like dentistry where you're going every 6 months or 3 months or whatever. Like what has a better subscription service, quote unquote, than dentistry?
But most,
and he was like, well, here's why. There is a subscription thing. There's add-ons. People spend more on their dog than they will themselves.
Absolutely.
There's a scarcity of environments. There's not that many vets. And I was like,
very little insurance.
Perfect very little storm. Insurance.
Perfect storm.
It's 20,
yeah. Perfect it's storm healthcare. Can go either way.
Yeah,
you buy it 24x. I want to talk to you in 2 years. See but how
the
it went.
The multiple. Wait for it.
What do you mean? Wait for demise.
Wait for us to tighten up in dentistry and for it to go more consolidated, and you'll see that happen.
I see what you're saying.
A different chapter in the book than we are, and that's just further along. And it happened also in healthcare until it kind of flipped fully.
So you're saying, Dwight, the consolidation will cause
higher multiples
because of the scarcity.
Yes. Scarcity, less available, and people are trying to scale faster to make it happen, and that will happen.
I'm going to throw this out there so I'm on record saying it from, you know, all this Team Neversell we have. If anybody calls me or knocks on my door and offers me 27X,
deuces.
I will sell, and I'll come with it and build whatever you want.
Hey, you know what? I ain't mad at you. I'm done. Yeah, right? Wow.
Oh, shit. That's amazing. That's incredible.
All right, everybody. We will see you on the next episode.
See you guys.
Over and out.